It's good to see you here this morning. I'm glad you all survived in this past week. I don't know about you, but I'm not sure I've ever seen it rain as hard as it rained on Tuesday. I think it was Tuesday afternoon, the day I walked to work, so that I could be healthy on my wife's request. And the day that I sat all Tuesday afternoon here studying because I was waiting for the rain to stop, and it didn't. And I did have an umbrella, but it was too big. And it's been weird weather this week, hasn't it? I think while we were going, there was a storm on what, Friday? Storm on Friday or something like that. Someone was out of power or something like that. Just kind of listless hope that now we can get some dry so the farmers don't have to use boats to plow their fields. So greetings from my daughter Lizzie. She is doing well in Hardin, Montana. And for those of you who are really curious about her cat, we did find it. It was behind the hot water heater, and we did get it out once, and it went back behind the hot water heater, and then we had to remove the hot water heater to get it out the next two times. So we locked it all off, and now the cat is hiding under her entertainment center in her living room, and only comes out at night. So, at least she knows where he is, so that's always a good thing. And but the cat is having its revenge on Lizzie because it gets up in the house 3 hours a night now. He can't go downstairs. So anyway, we get the ongoing saga of the cat. Of course, you know what she's thinking about doing now. So they can both hide under the entertainment center. So, she's doing really well. And thank you for allowing us to go and visit her. Any of you ever driving through Montana to go South Dakota or somewhere like that and stuff, and if you're on Interstate 90, you go right past Hardin, stop there, there's a McDonald's and Hardee's, and fun place to stop. No, it's not. But anyway, stop there anyway, say hi to Lizzie, she'd love to hear from you. I just want to mention that one of the special things we're going to be doing next week during our service, and I don't know, since I've been here, I don't think we've ever done this on an Easter service, we're going to have a baptism service. And so we're going to be baptizing one individual. We always have room for more if any of you feel led by the Lord to be baptized, and you haven't yet, please talk to me this week and we'll get you scheduled. We're also going to have another one in June, so be thinking about that. Again, baptism is not something that saves you, but baptism is something that we do to proclaim that we have given ourselves to the Lord. So we're going to be doing that next. It's going to be a great Sunday next week. Come be a part of that. Come at 9 o'clock with great appetites because Rob is going to be cooking us a feast again, as usual. Do you need help? Yes, men. Yeah. This is men only doing the cooking, correct? Yes. Men, if you'd like to help with cooking, you can do everything but waffles. So, because waffles are my responsibility. So, did you know at Grandma's shop there's a waffle maker just like ours?
I swear.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. I didn't buy it. So, but it's there. Let's get to the serious stuff now, okay? I have to admit, I've really been enjoying the story until this week. And I probably still would be enjoying the story if I didn't have to preach the sermon. Because I'm telling you, for those of you who read your book, this is not a chapter of upness. You know, in fact, this is a chapter of if there's anything that they could do wrong, they did it this week. And I get to turn that into something really exciting for you folks to apply to your life. I'm by nature kind of an up guy, and it's really hard to look at something and just see bad decision after bad decision after bad decision, and a nation that was once glorious become two nations that are less than glorious. But that's what we're going to talk about today, the dividing of the nation of Israel and why it happened. Now, I wasn't here last week, so I don't know how far Steve took Solomon's life, King Solomon, because that's who he talked about last week. But really, what we're talking about today began back in Solomon's reign, because as wise a man as Solomon was, he did a lot of dumb things. You know, like marrying 700 wives. I would say that that's a dumb thing. We're talking about needing a self-defense program during marriage. Solomon probably needed that. 700. Then that wasn't enough. He had 300 concubines, which I don't really understand the reasoning behind a concubine. But anyway, you know, can you imagine? Guys, 1,000 women in your life, you know, each one of them wanting just a fraction of your time. You know, the guy was so smart, and yet did such a dumb thing. Were marrying these women maybe not have been one of the dumbest things that he did, although it ranks right up there. The thing that really starts, kind of kicks off what happens in my story today, is the fact that what Solomon did is he married women from foreign lands that God had expressly said before, earlier, to the nation of Israel, do not marry into these nations. Well, Solomon, evidently, in all his wisdom, did not learn that. And he started marrying into these nations that did not worship God. Now, it might have been a self-defense plan for him. He might have well, if I marry the princess from this nation, that nation will be kind to us. So he might have been doing it for that reason. We're not really sure. But one of the things that Solomon did is that when he married them and they came and lived with him in the palace, he allowed them to continue to worship their gods. And not only did he allow them to worship their gods, he started building temples for their gods so that his wives have places to go to worship. And so he starts building idols. He starts building temples for idols and for foreign gods for his wives. Another title for my sermon could have been Dumb Decisions. That was a dumb decision for him. See, he compromised. He wanted to make his wives happy. And I guess if you have so many of them, it's better to try to keep them happy. But that's not what you do. He knew that there was one true God. So why in the world would he have built places for other gods so that his wives could worship? He compromised his position. He tolerated something that should not have been tolerated, and God over the years has said, do not do this. And he did it. Well, that is really the beginning of our story for today, because our story is a result of what Solomon started to do and what the children of Israel started doing also. Now, it makes a lot of sense. You got a king, and he's building temples or tabernacles or places of worship for these foreign gods. And the Israelites are seeing his wives going to these temples to worship. So what are they going to do? I mean, it's just kind of that decision had an effect not just on Solomon's life, but on the nation of Israel. People started worshiping foreign gods in the nation of Israel. And of course, this makes God very, very angry at Solomon and also at the nation of Israel. And the actually tearing apart of the kingdom is God's plan. It's not his perfect plan. That's not what he had intended to happen. But he knows all things, and he knows that this is the decision these people are making, and this is going to be the result of the decision he's making. Now, we're going to kind of look at this, and we're going to make kind of a movie out of this, okay? Everyone likes to see a good movie, except, of course, what is it, Randy Frazee doesn't watch movies. That's what he says. He doesn't watch movies. But the other guy, what's the other guy's name? Max Lucado, he does, he watches movies. So occasionally, I'm sure most of us in here have seen a movie from time to time. You know, and there's some really good movies, and there's some movies you absolutely should not watch. Of course, one of my favorite movies is Return to Gilligan's Island. For some odd reason, I can't critique that movie according to these categories, because there's no plot, there's no setting. There's a setting, there's no plot, there are characters, but it's just a dumb movie. Anyway, don't buy it. Don't even watch it on Netflix or whatever it is. But we like a good movie, and there's a lot of critiquing of movies. Now, one of the things I've learned when I was with my son Ben is a movie buff. Ben, if you need any question, you want to know anything about a movie, call my son Ben. I'll give you his cell phone number. He will tell you everything about every movie, because he's watched. And he is not fun to watch movies with, because he critiques them. You know, I get done with a movie and it's kind of like, well, he says, "Dad, what'd you think?" And I said, "I enjoyed watching that." "Oh, but wasn't this wrong and that wrong and this wrong and that?" And by the time he gets done with it, it's like, "I guess I really hated that movie. I don't know." So we're going to kind of look at this as this kind of like as if we made a movie of it. And we're going to watch it. So first of all, one of the things you critique a movie by is the setting. Where is it set? Of course, nowadays, movies are set everywhere. I mean, they go to the extreme places. And, of course, nowadays, too, they don't have to, because they can do it by computer, which is really scary. The setting for our story today we're, of course, talking about the nation of Israel, which is a mighty nation. God has tremendously blessed that nation. But we're at now the end of King Solomon's rule. So in 1 Kings chapter 11, we see that Solomon dies. It says Solomon reigned in Jerusalem over all Israel 40 years. Then he rested with his fathers and was buried in the city of David, his father. It's the end of David's rule. The end of Solomon's rules. Now, our characters' names are very similar, so I'm going to be mixing them up all the time. I'm just going to apologize for that ahead of time. They're just kind of a J and an R, the only things that really separate them. But Solomon is dead. He's gone. The king that ruled is gone. The setting is that the people are unhappy. The children of Israel are not a happy group of campers right now. If you go to 1 Kings 12:4. This is why they are unhappy, because it says, "Your father put heavy yokes on us, but now lighten the harsh labor and the heavy yoke he put on us, and we will serve you." This is the people approaching Rehoboam, who we're going to talk about him a little bit later. But they're unhappy. They're taxed heavily. They're working hard. And they've had enough of it. Now, if you go to the book of Ecclesiastes, and that's not in our story, but if you go to the book of Ecclesiastes, you can read about all the things that Solomon did. Because Solomon wrote that book. And in there, Solomon says that he denied himself nothing that he desired. Well, that was pretty obvious. He didn't deny himself any women that he desired. But he also did these tremendous building projects. Tremendous. He was a supreme architect. He was really good. But you know, again, because the king wanted to build all these things, guess who got to build them? The children of Israel. They were tired of it. They were tired of doing all these things, and the harsh conditions that we're living in that Solomon had put on them, and the heavy taxation that Solomon had put on them. They were tired of it. So we have Solomon is dead and an unhappy nation. Okay, so that's the setting for our little story, our movie. The main characters that we're going to look at this week, now there are more characters in this story, but the two main characters we're going to look at are, first of all, Rehoboam, who is Solomon's son. Rehoboam is the heir to the throne. And we read in 1 Kings 11:43, again, we'll go through that, it says, Then he rested with his fathers and was buried in the city of David, his father, and Rehoboam, his son, succeeded him as king. So we have Rehoboam coming to power in Israel. And then we have another character that plays a big role in our story. His name is Jeroboam. Okay, so now you can understand why I'm going to get them mixed up. Rehoboam and Jeroboam. Okay. Jeroboam was from the tribe of Ephraim. And Jeroboam was a guy that we really don't know anything about him. We don't know how he became who he was and became noted. But we do know some things about Jeroboam. First of all, from 1 Kings 11:26, it says, also Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, rebelled against the king. He was one of Solomon's officials, an Ephraimite from Zeredah, and his mother was a widow, Zorah. No, I'm not pronouncing those right, but anyway. So he was an official in Solomon's kingdom. He was Ephraim, so he was a Jew. We're going to learn more about him, why he is such an important part of our story, let's go to 1 Kings 11:27-28. It says, now here's the account of how he rebelled against Solomon, against the king. Solomon had built the supporting terrace and filled the gap in the walls of the city of David, his father. Now Jeroboam was a man of standing, and when Solomon saw how well the young man did his work, he put him in charge of the whole labor force of the house of Joseph. So he was a hard worker. He was evidently a smart young man, and he did well, and Solomon noticed him. So that's his first kind of step up into the limelight here. But also, you know, we have to notice too that this is also, he rebelled against the king, and so first of all, now we're backtracking. How did he rebel against the king? Well, first of all, this is the story. Jeroboam was a good worker. He was an official in Solomon's court. He got put in charge of the labor people there. Now, of course, the labor people were not happy, if you remember that, about all the things that they were doing. And so, but our plot thickens here. Oh, we're not to plot yet. But anyway, we find out in 1 Kings 11:31 that as Jeroboam is doing his duties, he's going out of the town, and he meets a man of God, and the man of God says to him, comes up, and he says to Jeroboam, I didn't pick enough verses here and stuff. First of all, the man of God is wearing a new tunic or cloak or something like that. He comes up to Jeroboam. They're alone in the wilderness or out in the country or whatever. And the man of God comes to Jeroboam and he takes his thing and starts tearing it in pieces. His new tunic. Starts tearing it in pieces. And he gives 10 pieces to Jeroboam. And he keeps two. Well, and then we find out it says, and he says to Jeroboam, take 10 pieces for yourself. For this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, said. See, I am going to tear the kingdom out of Solomon's hand and give you 10 tribes. I'm sure that Jeroboam was a little shocked at this revelation that came to him. He didn't expect to become the king of 10 tribes of Israel. He was probably a little set back about that. And we don't really know what happened from here on out about Jeroboam, because until this time he had not rebelled. And then it says a little bit later that Solomon tried to kill Jeroboam, so Jeroboam fled to Egypt. So it's possible that Jeroboam decided that he was going to try to become king right away in Israel. And challenge Solomon. We don't exactly know what happened, but we do know that Solomon evidently heard about Jeroboam and what was going to happen, because Solomon tried to kill him. And so he fled, and he went away. And then this is last little section I want to read for you, 1 Kings 11, 37 and 38. It says, however, as for you, I will take you, and you will rule over and you will rule over all that your hearts desire. You will be king over Israel. If you do whatever I command you and walk in my ways and do what is right in my eyes by keeping my statutes and commands, as David my servant did, I will be with you. I will build you a dynasty as enduring as the one I built for David, and will give Israel to you. What a tremendous thing Jeroboam has been handed. And God says, I will make your kingdom whatever you want it to be if you follow me. I will make your dynasty as great as David's and as enduring as David's if you follow me. So that's Jeroboam, a young man who rebelled against Solomon, and yet who had been promised by God that he was going to be the king of Israel, the 10 tribes. And so those are the two characters. Jeroboam, who we've not heard a lot about yet, and Jeroboam, who we know a lot about because of what happens to him in First Kings chapter 11. Now, every good movie has to have a point of view. I mean, are we looking at it from whose point of view here? Well, of course, in every story in the Bible, we have two points of view. We have the upper story, God's point of view. What is God doing in this story that we're looking at? Well, God is disciplining, basically, the children of Israel. That's what he's doing. He's disciplining them. He's disciplining them. He's disciplining Solomon and or Solomon's family. And that's why I kind of think that Solomon had to know that the kingdoms were going to be split, because it wouldn't have been a punishment to Solomon if he had not known what was going to happen. So anyway, but God's perspective on this, or God's view, is that we are seeing now the punishment of God on these people. That's the higher story. There's also another part to that, and in 1 Kings 11, 39, 1 Kings 11, 39, God says, I will humble David's descendants because of this, because of their disobeying, because Solomon's disobeying. I will humble his descendants because of this, but not forever. Again, we have this little sign that they are going to be humbled, but there is going to be a time when David's line is going to be exalted. And of course, we know that that is referring to the coming of the Messiah, is when that is going to happen. But so this story is really all about the children of Israel being disobedient to God, not following what God wants them to do. And as a result, he is angry with them. He's going to divide the nation, really turn one part of the nation against the other part of the nation. And he's doing this to humble David's line, David's family. But also, I think he's doing this to humble the children of Israel. Of course, then there's the other point of view, which is the lower story. And basically, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about people who were unhappy. We're talking about kings who were unfair. We're talking about bad decisions. We're talking about all this type of thing. That's the lower story. So that's a lower point of view. So the plot. So what's the plot of our story? Well, again, we're just looking at Rehoboam. Jeroboam and Rehoboam. So here's the plot. And it's found in 1 Kings 12, 1 through 15. And can't really read the whole thing for you. I wanted to, so Mark, don't worry about it. But as it is, here we go. The short version. Rehoboam is king. Rehoboam goes to Shechem to meet with all of Israel. They come to the king and they say, "King, we're tired of working. We're tired of taxation. Would you please take it easy on us? That's what we would like." King says, "Okay, go away. I'm going to think about this for 3 days. Rehoboam goes and he consults Solomon's advisors. Solomon's advisors say, Rehoboam, we think it'd be a good idea if you would honor their request. We think it'd be a good idea if you'd ease up on them. We think it'd be a good idea if you just kind of took it easy on them and you would tell them, yeah, we're gonna take it easy." Rehoboam made a bad decision. He decided not to listen to Solomon's advisors, and it says that he went to a peer group, guys that were his age or younger, guys that were following him, that were serving him, that liked him. And he says, "Okay, I want your advice." Well, their advice was, "Hey, you know what? You are king. Be king. Don't give them any breaks. In fact, tell them, he whipped you with whip. I'm going to whip you with scorpions. You think you worked harder than Solomon? You're going to really work hard now. You think your taxes are tough now? Wait until I get done with you." So that is what he chooses to listen to. Bad decision. Bad decision. You know, and so he goes and he tells the people when they ask for 3 days, they come back. And he says, "Hey, you think you have it tough under my father? You are really going to have it tough now." That is just really not smart. But then it never says anything about Rehoboam having any of his father's intelligence. So anyway, the people of Israel, they just simply said, "Well, I guess then we don't have anything to do with your father David or with your pride." And so they left. And then they met with Jeroboam, who had come back from Egypt when he heard that Solomon had died. And they made Jeroboam their king. So Jeroboam, the prophecy came through that the man of God told Jeroboam. He is now king of 12 tribes. And Rehoboam is king of two tribes, Judah and Benjamin. Now, it sounds like it's kind of a... Is it not Benjamin? Benjamin. Yeah. And it sounds like it's kind of an unfair split, but right away, Rehoboam decides he's going to go to war with Israel. He's going to take Israel back, is what he's going to do. And so he musters up the fighting men of these two tribes, and he only can get 180,000 fighting men. He had a pretty good army. But he did one smart thing in his life. God said, "No, you're not going to attack your brothers." And I don't know what possessed him, but he actually listened. He listened to God. See, when we listen to God, God supports us. God takes care of us. And for the first 3-4 years of Rehoboam's rule, it was a pretty good thing. Things were going pretty well. then things fell apart. And Jeroboam allowed Rehoboam allowed foreign gods into the southern kingdom. He allowed foreign gods into Judah and Benjamin. He allowed worship. He built Asherah poles. He built temples to different gods. He allowed the people, well, he brought them into idolatry. And that was the beginning of the end for his little group of people. Although God intervened with good kings following him. One of the good kings was King Asa. And I'm sure that's why Holly and Brock named their child Asa, right? He was a good king. And it sounded a whole lot better than Hezekiah. And a whole lot better than Rehoboam. I mean, not Rehoboam. What's the other? Jehoshaphat. You know? Asa was a good choice, guys. You know, but he was a good king, and he did good things. But, you know, that's later on in the story. But we're not talking about, and he made great decisions. Rehoboam did not. And Jeroboam made even worse decisions. Jeroboam decided that, hey, I don't want the people going to Jerusalem to worship, because, you know, if they do that, then they're going to turn back to Rehoboam. Didn't he believe what God said? When God said, if you follow me, you will have 10 tribes. You will be a great nation. But no, he fears. And so he builds 2 temples and he puts a gold calf in each one so that the people can worship there. And then eventually he builds Asherah poles and he builds all kinds of detestable things. And soon Israel is in a spiral down. The 10 tribes are in a spiral that they are not ever going to come out of. Because their kings just keep getting worse and worse and worse. You know that they had one king that was a king for 7 days? That was it, 7 days. He ended up burning himself to death. He committed suicide. He went to the palace, caught fire, palace on fire, and burned to death. But you know, and this leads to the great king Ahab, which we're going to hear about later. But anyway, I look at this, you know, I'm thinking, okay, oh boy, the plot's horrible. The resolution is the two kingdoms. Not great resolution here to have two kingdoms split. I mean, that was God's plan. God's upper story, but not great. When we come to the theme of this particular section, things that the takeaway ones, and I think there's some things that we really can take away from this. And that's, first of all, when I look at this, I really struggled. I'm telling you, I struggled. You can ask Melissa, because I complained about it. I struggled with this. I struggled with this sermon. Because it's like, what do I tell people? But you know, it's pretty evident in here, some takeaways from this. First of all, the takeaway is, if we don't obey what God tells us to do, we're heading down a bad path. We're heading down a bad path. See, that's what Solomon did. And he started something bad. And then Rehoboam continued it. And as the nation split, Jeroboam continued it way on. And so we have these people who had every opportunity to follow God, who had been blessed by God, and they turned from him. Jeroboam was nobody. And God made him a king. And Rehoboam turned from God and worshiped other gods and worshiped foreign gods. And even when God came to him in a man of God and who spoke against the altar that Jeroboam was at, and as Jeroboam stuck out his hand to say, seize him, his hand withered. And he could not withdraw. He was scared to death of what had happened to him. And even then, and then the altar split, just like the man of God said it would. And the ashes all fell out. Everything happened as the man of God said. And this did not change Jeroboam's heart. He continued to rule badly. You know, we need to listen to what God tells us to do. The other thing that comes out of this too is, you know, we are all faced with decisions that we've got to make. But the decisions we make don't just affect our spouse. See, Solomon made decisions to allow his wives to continue to worship their foreign gods. It affected the whole nation. The nation started worshiping foreign gods. It's a bad decision that he made. Rehoboam made the decision not to give the people a break. And because of that decision, it split the nation in two. Jeroboam decided not to listen to what God said, and Jeroboam's rule and his kingdom just goes to pieces in the years to come. See, the decisions that we have to make, they don't just affect us. They affect the people who are around us. You know, we all think that, you know, like, my body is mine. You know, I'm thinking everyone says that, you know, it's like, if I don't want to exercise and if I don't want to eat right, that's my decision. Well, yeah, you know, that might be my decision, but my decision is going to affect my wife. It's going to affect my children. It's going to affect my congregation because I'm not going to be healthy and I'm going to be sick a lot and I'm not going to be at the top of what I should be. See, the decisions that you make, don't take them lightly because they will have a profound effect on everyone that is around us. And so when you make a decision, think about how does that decision affect the people around me, and is that decision that we are going to make according to the will of God? Couple takeaways. Just remember, God, a third takeaway, just to kind of, even though this is a terrible time in the history of Israel, God is in control. This is not outside of the control of God. In fact, God is permitting this to happen for his purpose of bringing the people back to him. He's allowing it to happen. So even when we are facing tough decisions and bad times, God is in control. Don't fret. Don't worry. See, if Jeroboam had remembered that God is in control, he gave me these nations, I don't have to worry about the children of Israel going to Jerusalem to worship at the temple, because God gave me these nations. He is in control. But no, he didn't remember that. And he took things into his own hands, and he blew it. And he blew it. You know, this is a tough time. But it all could have been avoided. It all could have been averted by people making wise decisions, staying close to God, and remembering that God is always in control. Let's pray. Father, thank you for this passage. Lord, it's not an easy one to look at. It's not an easy one to preach. But there are a lot of good lessons for us to learn. Lessons that can help us in our life. Lessons that can help us to be blessed by you. And lessons that can save us from being disciplined by you. Lord, I pray that we would learn these lessons. If we go to our small groups, Lord, I pray that we would talk about the decisions we make, who they honor. Father, I pray that we would talk about God and his perspective in these things. Lord, there is so much to learn from this, and I pray that you would apply these things to our hearts, Lord. Thank you for this time. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.